Off the Ball Breakfast.
I'm trying to go, is that to our advantage?
Would you
or theirs?
Prefer the murmur of conversation and debate?
Shush!
You're the one who hates shushing the kicker.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koi Gig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here to bring you through all the weekend's action from the world of women's football. And of course, this week we are also back with the international squad, with it being an international break. Turkey up this Friday in Tala at 7:30. You may have noticed a familiar voice in the squad announcement video, a little bit of Koigig influence coming in there. And then of course Slovenia on Tuesday. I think that game is at 5:00, but don't hold me to that one. Joining me to look ahead to that game and also at the weekend's Women's Super League action, I have goal scorer extraordinaire Scarlett Heron on the line. Scarlett, how are things?
I'm all good. I don't think one goal can contribute to me getting goal scoring extraordinaire as my title, but I'll take it.
Well, if Karen was here, and she's not because she's off sunning herself, and we all know how we feel when Karen decides to take a holiday, and that's simply unacceptable, that, you know, you don't often get your opportunities, but when you do, you take them and you deserve the praise for that. So in the same way that she gets the compliments, the rare goal that comes her way, you will also get the same amount of compliments from us.
Glad to say there's no recency bias of Karen being involved for so long.
No, I like to keep her on her toes with a bit of competition. Otherwise, she might desert me like Emma Byrne. Although, congratulations to Emma Byrne, who does have a new coaching role. She is, I think, well, we've always kind of expected that she was going to go further into coaching. And then obviously she joined up with the national team. And we had said to her before that we thought she would go in with a club first. But I think she's kind of wanted to dip her toe in slowly and not jump straight in and kind of learn the ropes. So she hasn't gone in with the WSL. She's gone in with Southampton. But I think it's a good stepping stone on what I expect to be a long career. You'll actually be able to hear from Alan Mahon, who is in the Women's International setup tomorrow on Off the Ball, because he is speaking to media ahead of that game against Turkey on Friday, which is unusual because we don't normally get to hear from the assistant coaches behind the scenes, unless, of course, it is Emma Byrne and we're nicely asking her to do us a favor and come on the podcast, as she is a former friend of the podcast. But Scarlett, bar your goal, you had a bit of an eventful trip down in Cork by the sounds of things.
Yeah, I gave a bit of a brief there. So I'm not sure if anyone follows any Shamrock Rovers women's players or coaches on any social medias, they might have seen that our bus got lodged into a ditch after the game. So we were stranded beside Mayfield, where the game was played, for quite some time. And our strength and conditioning coach, Orla White, decided to hand us all out bibs for our safety, of course. So it was quite the scene, as about 25 of us walked down the main roads of Cork trying to find a hotel. So we had to stop in some hotel and wait for another bus to pick us up. But we got the win, so it was all happy heads anyway, so it was all good.
Yeah, you got the win, and we should say that, you know, no one was harmed in this incident either.
Okay.
It was one of those funny stories more so than anything else. Because, yeah, I saw some of the photos on Instagram and I was trying to work out. I was like, that bus looks like it's in a ditch, but everyone looks very happy. So,
yeah, there was no danger. It was just stuck. But I think when we were leaving, it was getting towed back up the road. So I think it was okay as well. The bus survived.
That's good. And how are you feeling at this kind of early stage of getting back on the pitch and obviously getting a goal? It's nice.
Yeah. It's good. I think a lot of teams, been a lot of change in the league. So I think it'll be really exciting To see what will happen in a few weeks. So yeah, I think everyone's just really excited. Everyone's not showing too many cards. I've been talking to a few other players in different teams and everyone's a bit quiet. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it'll be a very different year to last year, which is good. Some new teams, obviously Waterford coming in and some other teams strengthening. Some teams might be a bit weaker, so we'll see how we get on.
Yeah, we like to see a bit of change in these things to keep them nice and fresh and entertaining. March 8th is the first round of fixtures, is that right?
Yeah. The President's Cup is the weekend before that, so the whatever that is, the 3rd or the 2nd. So then next week, yeah, the 8th is the league starting.
Yeah. Well, we'll do a proper preview ahead of that starting. We might get some other voices on besides yourself and Karen, just so you know, it's not complete bias towards Rovers. I shouldn't even say bias. It would probably just be like a fight between the two of you for the podcast about how the season is going to go. Yeah, I mentioned it at the start of the podcast there, but obviously this week is the Turkey game. We finally get to see what Carla Ward is going to do with the squad. I don't know how you felt about the squad when it was announced. I mean, I think there were some people who maybe expected it to be vastly different from what we have seen in the past, just because of some of the things that Carla had said, the fact that we have so many injuries. We also had those three big retirements as well before this camp. But it's pretty much by and by what you'd expect, with Mel Phyllis being the only real name in there that we haven't seen too much of before.
Yeah, and obviously people are going to talk about the team that was picked and all, but I think Carla will take a while to get to know the players, and obviously you don't want to come in straight away and change an entire squad. You have to give all the, like, you have to give everyone who's there, you have to give them their merit where it's due. Like, they've done really well with the team in the last few years, and they deserve, obviously she wants to see all the players that have been involved and have done so well for the national team. So yeah, I think it was a standard enough team. Obviously I think there'll be some changes to it as we go forward. She'll see new players and she might find another Mel Phyllis. We'll see how she gets on as well in this camp, and yeah, we might find a few hidden gems, might get a few young players in, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see how she sets up as well for the two games.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who she does bring in, as you say, because I think there definitely has been that sort of feeling, and from a few things that she said, that she is keeping an eye on some players who maybe aren't Irish qualified as of yet, or in the process of going through that qualification. So a lot of the time we don't really hear about it until that passport gets secured or that qualification gets secured. And also you mentioned about the young players, and we have the under-19s camp and the development squad, which you of course know lots about. But those players are also getting the opportunity to put themselves in front of her. And it seems to be, since she came in, she's talked quite a lot about youth and youth development. I even thought it was interesting at the announcement of the squad, and she was talking about Turkey as an opposition and Slovenia as an opposition. And she talked specifically about their younger underage players who are coming up. And I think that's probably the first time in a while that I've sat in a press conference with an Ireland manager and felt like they were keeping an eye, or they knew enough to mention something like their underage setups and what was happening behind the scenes there, never mind what was happening behind the scenes here.
Yeah, and I think it's really positive as well, like you talk about the 19s and development squad, the three teams are all in at some stage this week, so it'll obviously give a chance for the three teams to come together, and for obviously Carla Ward and her staff to have a look at all three teams, which is really, really good. That's something that we haven't really seen since Vera's home base sessions, which was like 2 years ago at this stage, 3 years ago. So I think that's really, really positive. And yeah, as I said, like it'll take her time to get to know all the players that are on any provisional squads, or any girls that are on the radar, and any girls that might come over from the US or England that might be Irish eligible. And it'll all take a while for this to bed in, but I think that's what we've been talking about and looking at, is like that long-term vision. Like, she's only been in a month. I don't think we should be looking at these games as, obviously we want to win them, want to win them well, but they can't, the way we play and the way they're set up is going to be new to the girls, according to obviously Carla saying it's going to be a new system, it's a new style of football, so we can't be too harsh on the performance overall. give her a chance to get to know the girls to know her. And I think it's really positive so far. So I'm really, really looking forward to seeing how she gets on.
I look forward to getting all the inside scoop from you on what it's like to play with Carla Ward watching on, because you're part of that development squad. And as well, part of that, the crossover of the camps was to allow, is Katie Keane and Jess Fitzgerald will be in with the squad from the under 19s, in with the senior squad, not as players or that they're going to feature in the match day squads, but more just while they are at home here to kind of give them a, I know they've probably already had a table. Katie definitely has already had a taste of the international setup and what it's like, but it is good to see that Carla is jumping straight in with giving those players that opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. And Jess Fitzgerald was in as well a while ago under Eileen. So yeah, it's great. And it gives them girls an opportunity. Obviously, they're so young, like, and just it'll sort of ease that transition for them as well. You're not kind of getting thrown into a camp where you don't know anyone and you're shy, you don't want to come out of yourself at all. And it'll give them a chance to obviously get to know all the senior girls while also being with their 19s as well, the girls that they do know. And yeah, I know they have qualifiers coming up as well. So Dave Connell, the 19s manager, we definitely focus on them as well and not letting the sort of them get too big for their boots. Maybe I think that's also important. So but yeah, I think Katie and Jess will fly it in there, and it's a great opportunity for both of them in front of the new manager. So yeah, and I think it also shows that the pathway is there for girls in the league transitioning from that underage setup to the senior setup. So I think it's all very positive.
Definitely. And the fact that we haven't really had anything in place for the last couple of years, as you mentioned earlier, under Vera. Now, I will say this is only being put up for, as a once-off at the moment, and it'd be good to see something more consistent. Definitely 100% step in the right direction, but we want to see more of this happening, and it's not just, you know, this one game that happens and then there's nothing for months on end, because as we have seen, that pipeline of talent is there. It just needs the help to develop it and keep growing it as well, especially as we see more and more players become interested in that professional setup over in England and making sure they're developed to the right level, that when they do go over, A, it's not as much of a struggle as it is to adjust, and also B, so that they're in the best peak condition to not get injured, because that's something that we've seen with a couple of our younger players. That has kind of hindered them a little bit. You look at someone like Jessu and her ACLs, and again, there are so many reasons why these things happen, but any way that we can mitigate it and make sure people are in the best condition possible is a good thing. Scarlett, you were, I'm actually just going to get it up here, you were looking at the WSL at the weekend, and you have a controversial team of the week this week in some aspects. You were already offering excuses in the group chat before you sent it in, so do you want to run through it there and we can discuss it a little bit?
Yeah, I can do so. In goal, Ayaki Yamashita, three at the back, left centre back would be Katie McCabe, even though she would not be happy with that position whatsoever, but we're going to put her in there. Centre of the three, Maya Letizia, right centre back, Sophie Howard, and then three in midfield, Janice Kamen, Jill Roord, and Morena Caldente. And then on the left, we have Mary Fowler, on the right, Vivian Asai, and then two strikers, Elizabeth Turland and Alessia Russo.
We'll go to the obvious first. Nobody Shaw.
Nobody Shaw.
She's back. She's scored goals. She is sensational, we have to say. And there does come a point, I know, where we have to draw a line and say we can't just put her in every week. But explain yourself to the masses and obviously to Bunny Shaw, who intently listens to this every week to see if she's made it in or not.
I hope not. She's very scary. I wouldn't like her coming after me now. But yeah, so obviously not going with Bunny Shaw, coming back, scoring two great goals. Her and Mary Fowler's link up is like terrifying. And it's kind of what her and Hemp were looking at the start of the year as well. So it's great to see that she can come back into the goals straight away. And like her second strike was just unreal on the turn. Kind of giving a bit of Stephanie Roach-esque sort of that pirouette turn and the volley finish. But yeah, I think Turland was brilliant. I think her press is outstanding. I think that her work ethic and just her eye for goal is brilliant. And I think she's been really, really good for Man United this year. And I don't think you could have really left her out. She's one of them players, I think, though, that kind of will come in and out of it in terms of game weeks. One week she kind of is quiet enough, and then the next week she'll score twice like she did at the weekend. So, yeah, I think her performance put her definitely in a place to deserve the team of the week spot. And then in terms of Russo, I just thought she was really, really good. She was creating lots of chances, obviously got a goal, and then was the maker of the own goal as well at the early stages. And I just think Russo, for me, Russo does more than Bunny Shaw in terms of off the ball work as well, in terms of sort of getting involved in the play more and making things happen. And I think Bunny Shaw, as we know, is probably the best player in the league, if not like the most influential player in the league. You can kind of compare her with Haaland for the men's team, and I think they're very comparable. Sort of that six-yard box poacher, like always pops up with goals, but doesn't do much off the ball. But then at the end of the, I suppose that's what your striker's looking to do, score goals. But I think for the contribution that both Turland and Russo had off the ball for their teams at the weekend, I think that they edged it over Shaw for me. And I couldn't put three strikers in. So, unfortunately, the controversial call of the week, Bunny Shaw, is left out.
Hey, look, we've done more controversial things when it comes to the placement of players on teams. I think there were sometimes, especially when Emma Carroll used to do them for us, where like we were lucky if we got a defender in, and if we did, it would probably be the goalkeeper. And even that might be a little bit of a stretch. But no, you are totally right about Turland in what she has done. Like four goals, I think, in the last three games for her. And if she can continue to get that consistency, and even the touch for the first goal that she got at the weekend was really, really nice and very impressive. I had, as you were saying about Katie McCabe's positioning there in this team, I had some messages from a surprised member of OTB staff who will remain unnamed. That's a difficult one to say, because he was looking at the lineups on Google, I might add, for the match, and she had been given a 2.7 star rating. And I was like, now I wouldn't trust those ratings for Premier League matches, never mind WSL matches. But what was it that you saw from Katie at the weekend that impressed you?
Well, I don't think it was 2.7 now. I think that's a bit harsh. But yeah, no goal contributions at all, but I just thought going forward, she's really, really good. Like, she's just so aggressive and going forward. And even in the defending, she did quite well. I know they didn't have much to do. Spurs were really, really poor. But I thought she was kind of playing as that wing-back role that she does love. And just being a menace, you know, what she's best at. And we talk about that edge to her game that is sometimes a negative when it comes out in dissent and red card decisions and different things that have been spoken about the last few weeks. But I think that was Katie McCabe back in that game. Like, she was really, really aggressive on the front foot the whole time, causing Spurs all types of problems on the left. And yeah, just overall a great, great performance from her.
Is Kel Dente turning into one of the best signings that Arsenal have made in the last while? I think I just feel week on week her influence is growing more and more. Her confidence is growing more and more.
Yeah, I think she's criminally underrated, to be honest. There's a lot of good midfielders in the WSL that maybe don't get the traction they deserve. Like, we talked about Hasegawa a few weeks ago. Like, I think Kel Dente is one of those players that probably don't get the plaudits that she deserves. Obviously got a goal at the weekend as well, but I just think her ability on the ball is something that no one really ever talks about. Like, I think her feet are unbelievable. Like, their class for a midfielder, like a number eight, usually doesn't really have that technical ability of like a winger. But I just think her ability on the ball is brilliant. And I think her influence in that Arsenal midfield has been like second to none. Obviously an absolute powerhouse in our workhorse, can do both attack and defend, and just sort of your ideal number eight, your ideal midfield player. And yeah, I think she's like one of their key players that is, as I said, underrated. So she's been in the team of the week a few times, definitely would be a front runner for a team of the year team. And yeah, one of them players that no one really talks about, but is outstanding.
Someone who was also really good at the weekend, who's in your team, was Cayman. And as part of your little piece of analysis homework that I give you every week, you decided to look at the Aston Villa defence, and she took a lot of advantage of the Aston Villa defensive structure. So tell us what you observed from that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the two goals, first one was kind of, I just think Villa were complete architects of their own downfall in terms of their defence. It was atrocious. Like, they had, I think, 70% possession and didn't do anything with it. And then out of possession, they just looked clueless. I think the gaps between the back four were something that was really worrying. And that was obviously what came from the first goal came, and she kind of, it was just a really poor offside line. Like, the kind of second phase ball coming out, defenders step up, but she just sort of plays on the shoulder of Patton and manages to just, ball comes over to her, she spins, and the Villa defence are kind of in no man's land. She takes advantage of it, and like, Leicester, well-deserved winners. And then the second goal was just like a pure version, like a clear example, sorry, of just not defending set pieces properly. It just falls to her just on the edge of the box, and she just kind of like smacks it. It was a great strike. And yeah, I just thought the two goals there were crucial to see out the game and give Villa, that cushion against Villa. So yeah, I think a lot of credit has to go to her, but also the Villa defence didn't do themselves any favours, to be fair.
What is it about this Villa team? Because, you know, a couple of seasons ago, we were talking about them as a team who was going to push for that, potentially that third place spot, but at the very least would be up there with, you know, Liverpool and Manchester United and kind of another team added into that battling. And you look at some of the players that have left, even in the January transfer window, they just seem totally at sea when they've generally had quite a good setup when it comes to the women's team there. There's a good history there, but they just don't seem to know what to do.
Yeah, and I was even looking, like, in the season that Carla Ward took over in 22-23, they came fifth and got to the FA Cup semi-final, and now they're sitting second last with 10 points. They've got two wins this year against West Ham and Palace, and that's it. So yeah, really disappointing year. Obviously, it's been difficult. Robert Depau, with that sort of controversial sacking or leaving or whatever case was there, and then obviously having the interim manager of Sean Gotter. I actually thought they were okay during his term. And now obviously Natalia Ario taking charge. She was obviously at Real Sociedad before. Did quite well with them over the years. They got to the Copa del Rey final last year. So, like, yeah, like, you look at the squad they have, we've been talking about it all year, the attacking players they have. You've like Rachel Daly, obviously lost Kenzie Daly, but like, they still have a lot of options going forward. And I do think their defence has been something that's really struggled. D'Angelo has struggled at times as well in goal, but overall, I don't think she's a bad keeper. I think she's okay. Like, for the keepers that we see and the sort of mistakes that's made in the league, I think she's quite solid, but yeah, I'm not really sure what it is. You're looking at their games and they just don't really seem to have any sort of spark. Like, even you have Lucy Parker and Anna Patton, the two center halves. Like, Lucy Parker's just called into an English squad, and Anna Patton, as we know, is always brilliant for Ireland. And you just kind of wonder, like, what's the problem there? Even at the weekend, I think the biggest thing for me in terms of defence was the gaps between the four main defenders, I think, were too big. If a ball was out wide, if it came out to the left, the right back would go out, but then their left back would be nearly outside the box on the far side, and it's just too big. And then players can get sort of in behind those gaps. And yeah, for me, that was the main issue, but it's really disappointing from Villa this year, and not something that we probably expected from the start of the year. If you were to do a prediction, I don't think they'd be in the bottom half of the table.
Yeah, and you have to look at their run of fixtures and Palace's run of fixtures over the next couple of weeks in terms of a relegation battle. So obviously they do have a bit of a cushion. I think it's 4 points over Crystal Palace, but, you know, Aston Villa have to play Everton, they have to play Crystal Palace again, which will probably be like the deciding match. And then they've United, Liverpool, Spurs, Arsenal, West Ham, Brighton. You would say that, you know, none of those games are really guaranteed wins for them at all. And then Crystal Palace have Chelsea, Arsenal, Everton, Chelsea again. Oh, sorry, Chelsea's in the FA Cup final, but they have Chelsea, West Ham, Leicester, which is also going to be quite decisive, I imagine, and then City on the final day. But if Palace get something out of that Leicester result, and if they get something out of the Aston Villa game, and Aston Villa fail to capitalize on any of their other games, then all of a sudden, you know, it's dangerous territory for them.
Yeah, it is. But to be fair, I can't really see Palace picking up that many points come the end of the year. I think they've struggled a lot, but it's to no fault of their own, really. I think they've gained a lot of plaudits in the league, but I don't think that. Well, you're looking at that Palace that Palace Villa game, that could be the decider. Like, that's the 6-pointer, and you just if it's a draw, that's still good for Palace. I think Palace will need to go out and win that, but I think if Villa lose that game, they're in an awful lot of trouble. And even just if you're looking for financial backing off the board overall, and you're looking at the team that's in a relegation battle, like, it doesn't do Villa any good in terms of trying to get players in next year, and like how attractive a player is to a club would be a Sun League position. And looking at the year that they've had, 3 different managers, just absolute chaos, no consistency. That's not a great way to attract players. And then obviously Rachel Daly's probably near enough the end of her career, and that's such a big loss as well. So you'd be really worried for them now going forward, especially next year. So I think all they can do now is try to pick up as many points as possible at the end of the year and try sort of salvage it. And I think Araujo will try implement her style and try get prepped for next year, because she signed a, 3.5-year deal?
Yeah, so, it was a long one.
Yeah. So I think she'll want to just try build for next year now and try to forget about this season, but obviously have to stay up as well.
Looking at some of the other games that happened over the weekend, let's just go straight to the North London Derby. I don't know why I fancy talking about that one this weekend, but to be fair, I actually don't really think Arsenal are the talking point from this game. I always say, going into the most recent North London Derbies, that you don't really know what way they're going to go in the same way you would a good few seasons ago, when Arsenal would appear and hammer Spurs like 10-11-0 or whatever it was. You know, these games, you do expect them to be a bit closer. Obviously, Spurs got their first ever win over Arsenal December 23. So we've seen a definite change in the rivalry and the expectations, but this one felt like a little bit of a harp back to the games of old. And even the fact that you look at Tottenham's form over the last couple of games, you know, they've lost as many games thus far with several rounds still left to go as they had the entirety of last season. You could say some of it went down to losing Grace Clinton and Bizet, both to United. Obviously, Clinton was just a lone need to them last season, but she proved how much she is worthwhile. And I don't know, if it feels like a lack of identity or something that we're seeing for Tottenham at the moment.
Yeah, and even see like Bethany England's post after the game sort of apologising to the fans, because like you look at the occasion that was in it, maybe like North London Derby in the Emirates, like an unbelievable stage for all these players, and
nearly 57,000 people there.
Yeah. It's mad, and you just go out and they don't perform at all, they don't show up. I think Arsenal probably didn't believe like what was in front of them when they start putting these goals away, and even before the first goal went in, they were pelting them with chances after chances, and Tottenham just didn't really put a foot in at all. It was probably the worst performance from a team that we've seen this season in terms of like expectation versus reality, I suppose. I just thought it was, especially the first half, it was embarrassing, I think, for Spurs, and it's something that they'll have to really look at now going forward. But yeah, like you're even looking at the rivalry of both teams, and you have to go out with a bit of pride in the jersey, like for obviously the pride in North London. And I don't think any players really showed that at the weekend, which is really, really disappointing. And then obviously when the goals start piling on, you kind of, everything drops again, another level when you didn't think it could already. And yeah, I just, they didn't create any chances and Arsenal just kind of walked through them at times. It was really disappointing. But yeah, obviously great win for Arsenal. Leo Williamson's 250th appearance, which is
mental when you consider what age she is.
And she was out for the last year. Like, it's insane.
Like, she's what, 27, 28? I think she's like the same age as me.
It's mad. So yeah, it's obviously brilliant for her to be back in, loving life again, in the Arsenal shirt. And yeah, great goals by Arsenal as well. And they continued their momentum under Slaggers.
And it was nearly a dream return for Chloe Kelly as well after everything she went through at Manchester City towards the end, back in an Arsenal jersey after 2,815 days, I think I saw over the weekend. And if it wasn't for the bar, it could have been 6-0 and it would have been the perfect return.
Yeah, it was obviously lovely for her. And like, what a game to come back into and obviously get a good run out. And then today, you obviously seen that she's back in the England squad. I'm not exactly sure what happened to Beth Mead, but she obviously didn't feature, but it's a chance for her now. Obviously, like Serena spoke about Chloe Kelly, and she'll get chances before the Euros, and this is kind of one of them now. She'll get more minutes at Arsenal, not that she'll fit in straight away, because you can't really change a team that's flying like that, but one thing Arsenal do have is a lot of depth up front, so I think with the rotation they have going on, she'll get her chances. And another day that goal will go in off the bar. So yeah, obviously very positive start for her. And yeah, it's exciting. I can't wait to see Chloe Kelly in full action, which we haven't seen in a while.
No, and she's happy as well, which is nice after everything that had happened over the last while. I think I saw, maybe I'm making this up, that it was like a rib injury or something for Beth Mead. I'd seen it, and then it was a muscle injury for Whoopi Moy, which is why she dropped out of it as well. And Everton very nearly gave us one of the results of the season against Chelsea. Were it not for, of course, Lauren James, who else in that absolutely stacked, star-studded lineup of a Chelsea team could jump up with the 93rd minute goal to sweep a win for them. I was chatting to Heather Payne about this today, and there'll be a few bits from her on Off the Ball towards the end of the week, closer to the game. She's going to make, well, assuming that she's in the squad and in the team, which I think we probably would assume, she's going to make her 50th cap for Ireland, which again, for another young player, is quite a lot. But about how there's been a few times this season where Everton have been relatively close to a great scoreline. Now, there's been other times that hasn't happened. We saw when they played them in the cup the week before, Chelsea pretty much dominated, and a lot of it does come down to Courtney Brosnan's heroics. But that one of the things that Heather was saying was quite interesting, in that basically implying that there seems to be, since the new owners came in, a bit of a revival of feeling around the place. And, you know, after those tough ACL injuries they had, and I know they only just recently lost their captain, but they're starting to feel a bit more like themselves. And it was a really impressive defensive performance from them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think fair play to Heather as well. I thought she played really well and caused some problems when they were going forward. Now, Chelsea did dominate in terms of possession and had a good few chances, but Everton, yeah, to their plaudits, defended really well, which I suppose is something that we haven't really seen. Like, Courtney wasn't overly busy. She obviously had a few saves to make, but I think for the most of the game, for the most part, their defence was really, really solid. Obviously, that goal, Gago and Payne, I've spoken about them before. I just think they're class, the two of them together.
I actually thought of you whenever I saw Gago score. I was like, Scarlett will be happy with this.
Yeah, so both of them were nearly in the team of the week, just off that. yeah, obviously against the run of play, but a great, great strike. The angle of it was so tight, and I don't know how she managed to sweep it into the far top corner. It was class. Definitely shook Chelsea a bit. I don't think they would have expected to go down against Everton, but yeah, it's a bit, and I think it's inevitable at this stage. Coming back and got the equaliser. Baltimore, I think, as well, played quite well and made that equaliser, and then Lauren James doing what Lauren James does, curling it into the far corner. And it just kind of, after the game, you just kind of sit and you go like, I don't think anyone's going to stop them, and I don't think that they're going to be beaten. I think this will be one of them invincible seasons. And I think at this stage, you're looking, there's about 8 games left. What? There's how many points between them and United at this stage?
I think there's 7 ahead was the last I saw.
You're kind of looking, you're aiming for that Champions League now. That's what Bombastro wants in her first year, like, to complete that sort of double. Will be what they're for.
7 and ahead of United.
Yeah. And that draw made last week, or 2 weeks ago, we've seen could be a Leon Chelsea final, which would be very, very interesting. So yeah, I think that would be there at the forefront of their minds going forward now. So I just think they're unstoppable. There's no other question. It's going to be their league again unless something like drastic happens in the next few weeks.
Yeah, you mentioned United there, and although they are 7 points off Chelsea at the top of the table, they are in second position. And even when you said it, I almost had to mentally reconfigure myself that it wasn't City or Arsenal, because we're just so used to that being the top three. They just keep on scoring. And we talked about Elizabeth Cherland earlier and how she is going. Also, Mark Skinner had some nice comments about Aoife Mannion over the weekend and how important she is to the squad in general. It's always good to see her getting on the pitch, especially with the injury profile that she's had. But just in terms of Turland, he said the second goal sums her up as a person because she's tenacious, she runs, she works for the team. I've not seen many better finishers in the box than Elizabeth, but the development in her hold-up play from the start of the season to now outside of the box has been incredible. And they've kind of been the quiet success story of this season so far, in that we were very doubtful about what they were going to do. Quite harsh on them at times for some of their results, but the second half of the season in particular is treating them well.
Yeah, I think they've been brilliant. We've always spoke about their sort of defensive qualities, but I think at the weekend, like, they were ruthless. Palace created their own problems again. A few goalkeeping sort of mishaps, and the first goal was just a poor goal kick, and Turland pounced on it, and then that was the second as well, pouncing on mistakes. And as Mark Skinner said, like, that is the type of player she is. Like, she's a workhorse, and she's never going to get a ball to her feet 6 yards out and tap it in. Like, if she gets a goal, she's worked for it and she's sort of earned it. And I think that's the difference I was saying about her and Bunny Shaw. Obviously, two very different strikers, but both extremely effective. And obviously, Grace Clinton on the score sheet again, with a very brave header. Like, Ruben Moyes there last weekend as well, 2 weeks ago. So yeah, I think good win for United. Very standard stuff. Obviously, Palace are struggling, so you can't take too much out of it. But I think they dominated the game, did what they had to do, and got 3 points.
We also had a comprehensive win for West Ham against Brighton, who, once again, after all our hope for them at the start of the season, just haven't really been managed to kick on all that much. And then also a massive win for City, which we kind of discussed a little bit earlier with Bunny Shaw's goals against Liverpool. Matt Beard sounding very resigned afterwards about the Bunny Shaw goals. And I think trying to make the point that she scores these goals against everyone. So, you know, not that there's obviously some things for Liverpool to take away from it, but I think he was like, when it comes to her, she is just an incredible force. And we should also say, because we've talked quite a bit about Bunny Shaw, she obviously had that extremely poignant moment over the weekend where she hasn't actually played for Man City over the last while after some of the racist abuse she received from, I hate saying fans, from people, because I don't think you're a fan if you do that at a football game, whether it's against your own players or an opposition player, but had received quite a lot of racist abuse and had actually taken a bit of a mental health break for a game to just get herself clear. And she had that really powerful image of her doing the Black Power hand gesture after she scored. And she's opted not to talk about it publicly because it's just what's good for her and what's good for her own mental health. And that's totally understandable. But I think it was a really important gesture in the conversations that it made everyone else have over the weekend, even whether it was on punditry or commentary. There was a lot of really strong things people said, and hopefully it's a conversation that we keep having, because as the game continues to grow and grow, unfortunately, the likelihood is we are only going to see more of this sort of abuse leveled at players and managers. So important to keep that conversation open and make sure as well that that education keeps going in the game.
Yeah, definitely. And like, it's still something that's so prevalent. Like, you even see in the championship at the weekend, there was another issue with a racist remark by a player to another player, which just, it's so sad that it's still something that is happening in the world. And for it to sneak into women's football as well is really, really, really sad to see, because obviously it was sort of, it's, I think women's football was such a safe space for a long time. And even this season, we've seen a lot of different cases like this. Obviously, Lily Bright and Beth Mead as well. So, yeah, I think it was powerful from Bunny Shaw at the weekend. And I think for her not to speak about it as well is definitely a great decision from her, just to keep it to herself and get her own head right, because it would be very, it's hard to deal with that stuff. Like, you can't even imagine. But, yeah, it's just really, really poor. And hopefully that things like this, people standing up will change it. And yeah, where everyone's here to watch football at the end of the day, so keep it out of the game would be the best.
Yep, and we just want to enjoy the football. You can have your chants about the fans you support. You can have your non-abusive thoughts and feelings about how someone has played, but anything else, please leave it behind, because it's just not worth it, and it takes the pleasure out of it for everyone around you as well. Scarlett, thank you very much for today. Much appreciated as always. The Koi Gig Pod and Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. As I said earlier, and how we talked about at the top of the show, this is an international week, so there will be live comms on Off the Ball this Friday from the game, which is kicking off at 7:30. We will also have live League of Ireland commentary on the night, so it'll be swapping between the international game and the League of Ireland game. I'll reserve my thoughts and feelings on the FAI putting a full slate of League of Ireland men's fixtures on the same night as a women's international for this week. Maybe one we can dive into a little bit after the game. But do tune in, because we will have all the updates for you, and there'll also be lots of previews on Off the Ball Breakfast and the evening show throughout the week, as well as different bits and pieces from the camp. So we're putting the last couple of months behind us. It's a new Nations League campaign. Yeah, exactly. New manager in there. Bigger and better things. We're focusing on a new tournament to qualify for. And yeah, it'd be great to have you all there too. So we will chat to you during the week. But for now, thank you for listening.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball, in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.